This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run begins. It's a steep ascent to 10 o'clock in the morning. That's just 4 hours from now. We are going to be bringing you a range of interviews, news and analysis. And if you want to be part of this conversation, you can always join us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. This, of course, is midweek. It used to be called Hump Day, but then the Elections Commission changed all that and we have to start calling Wednesday midweek because the midweek poll was perhaps the most significant thing that we've had in the last month.
Well, I'm all for still calling it Hump Day. I don't think that goes away. I mean, it is a new Malaysia, but I like to still retain some things of comfort. Hump Day brings me comfort.
Okay. Well, I do think that even in the new Malaysia, some things don't change. And this present government can do many things. It can't rename the days of the week. I don't believe they can do that.
Right. Well, but it happened just 2 weeks ago, guys. I mean, remember, Election Day was only 2 weeks ago, but it feels so much longer than that. So much has happened, the amount of news flow that's coming out.
Yeah, in fact, you know, last night I got a call from some friends who are journalists who were saying to me, it's just extraordinary. Every time they do a search on Malaysia, and if it's even on a bit, on, you know, several times a day, something big has happened, and therefore they feel they've got to report this. At least they have to consider it.
Yeah, and certainly spare a thought for the good folks in the media industry right now. They have had to go on multiple assignments every day for the last 2 weeks, you know, just to constantly feed this beast, right? We crave for all these updates, and they're just, you know, almost life changing, right? And you know, all the revelations that are coming out, be it on 1MDB or from the MACC. Did you guys see? I'm sure you guys saw this. Scenes outside the MACC office yesterday when the former prime minister went in for to give his statements, right? It's these scenes appeared unimaginable just a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, so, you know, a big shout out to all the reporters who are, you know, toiling the ground for us.
And keeping us posted. Yeah. But I must say, with social media, with technology now, it's like constant updates. Everyone's always checking their phones, and you can even watch press conferences live right now. It's so different than what it was before. I don't remember a time when you could even watch a press conference live, like so many press conferences live in a day.
Yeah, and of course, it's partly because of the cabinet positions have been filled and people have been taking their oath and, you know, serving their first day on the job. Mat Sabu, new defense minister, Anthony Lok, the transport minister, and so on and so forth.
Right, and I think also the frequency, or rather the heightened frequency of these press conferences, also tell us a very important thing about this new government, that they are very much more willing to be more transparent and more open and communicate to the masses. Now, so on one hand, while more press conferences means more work for the journalists, but, you know, it still means that there's that more open line between the cabinet members and the rakyat.
Yeah, but I know a number of journalists who were quite, you know, they were like talking about, you don't want to be a journal anymore, you know, don't want to be media, they're looking for something different. But after what's happened in the past 2 weeks, they're like, oh, it's great to be a journalist again. You know, there's so much to do, or so many things to do. And even ex-journalists now want to join back the industry.
Yeah, there was, I think, quite a bit of self-loathing in the profession because of the huge amount of censorship, the fact that many media organizations were politically linked, and therefore journalists had to shape their, you know, their stories in order to conform to those political orientations being set by their bosses.
But also job prospects. I think a lot of them are saying they're seeing job cuts and all. But then suddenly now, there's quite a lot of demand for journalists as well to come out with stories. I mean, I know some of them who've turned out to be fixers, where they help foreign journalists meet local contacts to come up with a story on Malaysia, because the foreign journalists are coming to town now to cover Malaysia.
Yeah, you know, the fixing job, and I got my first fixing job when Dr. Mahathir Mohamad stepped down as Prime Minister, and the whole world came to KL to follow that story, and there were just not enough fixers around.
Hold on, I think we need to clarify what fixing is for those non-media practitioners, because they might have a different kind of fixing in mind.
I don't know. There's only one kind of fixing.
Oh, really?
For journalists, for foreign journalists to meet local people, or to just tell them where is the PC, what what's happening, basically to come out with a story on Malaysia.
Well, basically, you do everything from advising them on the editorial line and giving them framework and context and history to carrying their bags to arranging transport. I mean, just about everything. But those jobs don't last very long, though. They're always a couple of days. So might be extended this time around. We'll be coming back with a look at Starbucks. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Stevie Wonder with Higher Ground. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. It's coming up to 10 minutes after 6 in the morning. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Later this morning on The Breakfast Grill, we'll be having newly minted MP from Lembah Pantai, Fahmi Fazil. So if you have any questions for him, or comments, please tweet them or WhatsApp them in, and we will be weave it into the conversation.
Yeah, you know, quite the story there out of Lembah Pantai, although it was very much a stronghold for Pakatan, yet he was up against the political giant, Raja Nong Chik, yet Fahmi was able to win with a pretty healthy margin, right?
About 5,000 votes.
Yeah, 5,000 votes.
Though it is very interesting to note that much of the media coverage for him in the run-up to the polls suggested it was a very tight race. Mm. Yes, Nurul Izzah Anwar did win that constituency. She won it with a slightly over 1,000 vote majority. It's a very divided constituency. And that delineation exercise, that rather notorious one, changed the demographics by adding some 6,000 votes from a very different part of the city into the mix.
Right.
And so there was expectation that Lembah Pantai would be lost in this general election because nobody had counted for the swing, especially in terms of the Malay ground.
Right. And plenty of expectations placed on the shoulders of Fahmi as well. You know, he's seen as a rising star within the Pakatan ranks, you know, while this next part might be a bit premature, but there's already talk about him being a possible PM candidate later down the line.
Okay. Well, when you say later, you mean really like way down later.
Well, but you know, still, you got to start him
young. He knows how to perform, and that's partly his theatrical background or his background in theatre. He's got a great demeanor. I must admit that I know him personally as a friend. Mm-mm. I'm not very close to him, but I've known him. As a measure of how close I am to him, I didn't get invited to his wedding. So I'm not that close a friend.
And you had to put it out there. Are you still bitter about that?
Yeah, child? I clearly am.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Time to move on, man.
Okay. Speaking of bitter, and Starbucks in the United States has formally implemented a policy to treat everyone who walks into their cafes as a customer, whether they buy a drink or not. Apparently, this revised policy does not apply to its outlets in Singapore. So the question is, can mothership Starbucks change policy as significant as this and not have its outlets in the developing world, the third world, in the darkest parts of Asia, do the same? And I mean Singapore by this.
Well, in Singapore, they've come out to say that, you know, they continue to review their practices and they are creating a welcoming third place for their customers. But then again, you know, they leave it up to their staff to exercise their own judgment about non-paying guests. I'm not sure whether this happens in Malaysia as well. I mean, would you walk into Starbucks and just to hang out and not buy a drink? I find it a bit weird. I don't know. Well, I think this happened in the US because, I mean, US came up with this rule in the US because there was this whole racism issue that came up. Some people went up to Starbucks, they were hanging out in Starbucks, and the Starbucks staff called the police on them, and that turned out to be a racial issue following that.
It was two black men, and that happened in Philadelphia. So as a result, Starbucks in the US, the mothership, as Sharad described them, has now changed their policy to say, you know, basically we are everyone is our customer, anyone can come in, use the bathroom, hang out, etc. But I think think this, in Singapore's case, right, because there is this perceived culture, and to a certain extent here in Malaysia as well, whereby you just go in there, get that cheapest drink, and then just stay on for hours, you know, just to use the free Wi-Fi. And, you know, perhaps it's coming from a different base compared to what actually happened in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think this is much about a message to the staff as it is to customers. I don't think they're saying, oh, come and hang out all day long at Starbucks. But what they are saying, definitely to their staff, is your presumption must be that people can come out and hang out. So what happened with those two men, Joyce, that you mentioned earlier, was they were waiting for a third friend.
Yes.
They were going to have a meeting, and so they didn't order anything yet. And because they hadn't ordered, and the presumption is that you ought to order, you just can't come to the store and hang out, then the staff acted. So I think this is very much about signaling to the staff. Now, in Singapore, should they have that same generosity in terms of approach to customers as they do in the U.S.?
Well, I guess that's something for the Singaporeans to find out. Now, I do recall from my stints over there, this idea of a third place is very prevalent. I mean, because there's just scarcity of space, right? You'll even find kids at the airport, like taking a train, Singaporean kids, taking a train, going to the airport just to hang out because they just need some space and do their homework there. You
but know? Changi is a good place. I mean, it's a place that you can hang out. I don't know. I think it's quite fun.
Yeah, and I think a lot of parents probably feel safer with their kids in Changi than in a void deck, which is that open space in a HDB.
People go date at Changi. Did you know that? Dating at Changi.
You know, Changi introduced that laws that don't allow people to kind of come in and just do the shopping.
Ah, so there we go, right? No, so then should not just Starbucks, but Changi as well, be more open and more, conscientious of their customers.
Yeah, Singapore hasn't had the special day that we had. There isn't a new dawn in Singapore quite yet. So, okay. We'll be back with a look at an eminent person who took the LRT and a little storm in the teacup that it caused. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Human League with Don't You Want Me. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Koh and Tan Chung Han. And I'm sure you want us, because we're going to be with you, and whether you like it or not, we're going to be with you until 10 o'clock this morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis. We said earlier we're going to be talking to Fahmi Fazil, the newly minted MP for the parliamentary constituency of Lembah Pantai. It includes Bangsa. It also includes Pantai Dalam and other areas. It's quite an extraordinary constituency because of its demographic spread. Now, there have been many things that have been happening, including the arrival yesterday of Robert Kwok from Hong Kong. He, of course, is on the Council of Eminent Persons. He's a billionaire Malaysian, because at his age, he was born in the old Malaya, colonial Malaya. He's just one of many people, one of five people on the Council of Eminent Persons. One of them is Jomo Kwame Sundram, because well-known as an academic and so on and so forth. Now, he was captured on film reading a newspaper on the LRT. Now, this is a spectacle that perhaps is curious for a lot of Malaysians, because we don't expect eminent people to take public transport.
I don't know if Jomo actually asked for the title eminent people, but yeah, you're right, because very often there appears to be this disconnect between the ruling class versus the rest of us proletariats who are accustomed to using...
You're using Marx's language, Tan Chung Han.
Maybe a little bit. Okay. Indulge me here. All right, yeah, so with Jomo riding the LRT, that's gotten tongues wagging, but really, I mean, should it be that much of a shock? I think that's the question here, because after all, they are just regular people, or as they say in the American South, they still got to put on their pants the same way.
Well, true, but it's just that I guess for Malaysians, we're just not used to, we're used to the ministers. I mean, he's not a minister, but all these people that are higher up there.
Eminent.
Eminent people or ministers. They have drivers or they have a convoy to get them to places. So we're not used to this. I mean, definitely a welcome change when it comes to this, and you can see that has gone viral. The photos and people sharing it, he was on LRT. Did you check this out? Another thing is also, did you guys hear news on the new transport minister? He told the staff, please don't line up to greet me. That's wasting time. Right. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So there's maybe a new norm that's going to be set with regard to protocol. Mm. But coming back to Jomo, what is interesting is that even if he did not in his previous incarnation as an ordinary person, and he wasn't really that ordinary because he was quite a high ranking member of the UN and right. so on and so forth, that he might have changed. So if I got a position on that Council of Eminent Persons, I might decide to engage a driver and so on and chauffeur and so on and so forth in order to live up to the expectations I think are out there that I in fact conduct myself in a particular way. Mm. The fact that Jomo hasn't changed, I think, is quite interesting. Mm. And Han, you're right that in many parts of the world, people don't expect those in prominent positions to behave any differently from them. Mm. We have monarchs in parts of Europe who just take public transport. We have ministers who might have very pared down security. You know, whereas in other countries, you know, they have a convoy and entourage. They have security detail that goes and sweeps, you know, everything before them before they even turn up. Look for bombs. And
right. Yeah, you've got the Boris Johnsons who cycle to work. You've got the Yanis Varoufakis of Varoufakis's? Is that a plural?
Yes, I think we'd use it that way, yes.
The Yanis Varoufakis's of the world who ride motorbikes into work, right? So you've got that end of the spectrum and then versus the entourage. Now, let's kind of flip this discussion on its head here. So on one hand, while it's, you know, one thing for eminent people to be seen just living their regular lives like ordinary people, that's one thing. But what about, say, if let's say Sharad, right? He gets that step up. And he gets the entourage and all that. Would we judge him and would we see that in a different light then? I mean,
Would you think any less of me?
Correct.
If I accepted the trappings of power?
That's right.
If with power came great wealth, accepted the trappings of great wealth as well.
It's a yes or no one, buddy. Come on.
Because you're asking if other people would see me differently. Right. I don't think so. I think I would just be simple old me riding in my Rolls Royce. I mean, that's what it would be, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, it's just that things that Malaysia is just used to. You can see that when this photo went viral, everyone got excited because we're not used to seeing this. And he was reading the paper. I remember a comment my friend made. He's reading The Sun. It's the free newspaper, you know. He's being economical. Right, as well. He didn't pay for the paper.
Yeah, well, that's one thing. I think also the thing that you would note with Jomo, and if you've ever had a personal encounter with him, he dresses very simply. And I believe, you know, Han, when we did that moderating work for, was it Sunway University,
yeah,
remember?
Right. Yeah.
And he was on the panel that I moderated. Mm-hmm. And again, many of the people on my panel just, you know, didn't wear suits, where all the young people were all in suits and they, you know, they seem to think that what was important was the suit, not the content of, you know, of their person or also their brains. And so the intellectual confab became a costume festival.
So in other words, it's not how that individual, eminent or not, gets to work, you know, be it by public transport or private. It's about the character of the person.
Absolutely. And tell us, what do you think of eminent people riding the LRT? Now, taking us to the first bulletin of the morning is The Doors and Light My Fire. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Pretenders with Talk of the Town. There's so much that abounds in people. Robert Quartock's Talk of the Town. And I think images of him along with Dime Zainuddin, because both on the Council of Eminent Persons, there being the talk of the town yesterday. I'm Shaurya Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Cheng Han. And the morning run continues. Let's look at the other major talk of the town. I mean, it's just endless, this list of people that we need to keep track of. And then, of course, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, Prime Minister, current Prime Minister, but he came in on a compact, a political compact that said he would take the country for a couple of years before he handed the reins over to Anwar Ibrahim, who is the de facto leader of PKR, and of course, one of the leaders of Pakatan Harapan.
Yeah, so now there are some people saying that, you know, let Dr. M complete his full term as PM rather than to be PM for just a year or two, you know, that they think that he should just stay on as PM and then Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim can take that on later if they win the elections again. But Tunam is actually, yeah, just give him a break, you know, after a couple of years. Yeah, let him enjoy his life after that.
Well, that's if he wants to, right? Because his desire for change and trying to rectify the wrongs from the previous government is so evident. You know, he's not just content in becoming the prime minister. He wanted to take on the education portfolio as well. Recall that. So now, obviously, these calls for him to complete a full term as a prime minister, once again, signaling that Tun Foria, you know, there is this plenty of clamor for him to stay on as long as he can.
Well, the thing, of course, is that I don't know how widespread this call is. There was an article, we'll be tweeting it out, which is a letter to Malaysia Kini that's saying it and tries to make an argument for allowing Tun to complete the term. But there are competing principles that are actually in this case. One is that if you've already publicly made an agreement, what cost do you incur if you break that agreement? Mm-hmm. And what would be the basis of that break? Say for some reason something happened to Anwar Ibrahim and he was incapacitated. Then it wouldn't seem unreasonable that Mahathir continues. But if that isn't the case, then what would have had to change in order for us to accept that this was a reasonable shift in the compact?
Right. But we note that many commentators in the lead up to GE14 already said, you know, when Pakatan, or back then it was if Pakatan won the federal government, there was to be expected some dilution of the manifesto to begin with, right? And so, you know, whether or not voters will hold the Pakatan government to the letter of the law, or rather to the letter of the manifesto, to every single detail, you know, that remains to be seen. Or are they allowed to give some leeway to the reigning government?
There's also some skepticism on whether when they win the elections, Pakatan, whether or not there will be cracks after that. You know, remember when Tunan came to announce the cabinet, some of the cabinet members, and then there was this whole, there's one side, Rafizi, that came out to say, you know, why did you put a certain person on the cabinet and all that, but they seem to have sorted that out, right? And it's good that they managed to put that they're a team together, rather than, you know, if there is anything, any disagreements, they should do it in closed doors. But everyone is definitely watching them when it comes to their manifesto, as well as working together. And one of the things in the manifesto that everyone's looking at is the GST as well, whether or not they're going to go ahead with that. But it looks like they are.
You know, one of the things you have to remember, I think we look back to the Pakatan governments of Penang and Selangor. Penang was fairly stable in the 10 years that they ran Penang, and they continue to run Penang. But in Selangor, the record is a bit more patchy, because they actually got rid of their own in the form of Khalid, Menteri Besar Khalid. And this was attributed to factionalism within the party, to the failed Kajang move, and so on and so forth. So the question is, moving forward at the federal level, what are we going to see? Are we going to see the stability that we had in Penang, or are we going to see some of the lack of it's not a lack of stability, but the fractiousness that Selangor experienced?
Right. You know, I think, again, just trying to consider the other side here, I think the reason for this call for Tun Dr. Mahathir to complete a 5-year term as the prime minister is, you know, the idea of policy continuity, right? Because as opposed to, say, having Dato' Sri Anwar come in 2 years later and inherit a cabinet that he didn't put into place, and then perhaps risk having to tweak that lineup again and risking some instability. You know, granted, yes, cabinet reshuffles happen, right? But, you know, the idea is that then it's just an added layer of risk, right? So by having Tun Dr. Mahathir see out the full 5 years, that could mitigate some of those risks. Again, that's what I assume is the basis for this call.
Yeah, but the messaging is that they've already agreed that Dr. M will take on for a couple of years, and then Anwar Ibrahim will take over. So in that way, it's already there. That's what they've spoken to us before they won the elections, right?
Okay, tell us what you think. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9's Creedence Clearwater Revival. Have you ever seen the rain? I'm sure I couldn't. With me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. And the morning run continues. It's coming up to 15 minutes past 6 in the morning. It is the 23rd of May. Now, some of you have asked what time Fahmi Fazil, the newly minted MP for Lembah Pantai, is coming on. Just after the 8 o'clock bulletin, as we always do. It's the Breakfast Grill this morning, and he's our guest. Now, at the first press conference by the new Communications and Multimedia Minister, Gobind Singh Deo, the minister mentioned his intentions to fulfill the new government's promises in the Pakatan Harapan's manifesto around the question of press freedom. He said the Pakatan Harapan government is fully committed to building a system where media reporting is done without fear or favour. To get a view of the ability for the government to put this in place, we spoke to veteran journalist Jabbar Sadiq and asked him what his response is to the statement made by Gobind.
I think that's great news. You have a government that's committed to media freedom, that's going to review laws which are oppressive to the industry and also to freedom of speech and thought. More than welcome anyone who says, I'm going to review all these oppressive laws. I'm going to change it so that we have a freer climate for us to express our thoughts and our opinions about matters that are concerning the country.
We also asked Jabbar if we need to be careful when dealing with these newfound freedoms.
Well, this newfound freedom means that everybody who has an opinion will voice their opinion. Whether that opinion is informed or uninformed, is a different matter. What we need is to educate Malaysians who read or who form these opinions that it must always be weighed on facts and figures that matter, not just shooting off your mouth and thinking that this speculation will come true. The problem in Malaysia is that we don't have that height of education, that level of education that says we can give an opinion which is informed. We are still not there yet. Our readers don't know what to read or to make sense of it. Our journalists don't even know how to ask questions. I think you can see that. You know, after so many years, our Prime Minister is ready to speak and they have no questions for him. They keep repeating the same old crap.
And that was Jabbar Sadiq, a veteran journalist. And I guess in the new Malaysia, we can use that four-letter word, apparently.
Well, I mean, for the record, you know, Tun Dr. Mahathir himself, in one of his earlier PCs, he used the full iteration of the word, the BS, right? Can I say that? I mean, if the Prime Minister can...
Why can't you?
Yeah, I know, right? Because he's the Prime Minister. Where's my boss? Hey, if Tun Dr. Mahathir can do that...
Okay, so
my producer is saying no.
Well, I don't know if Jabbar's being, you know, excessively critical of the local press. I mean, there are a lot of good people around who have been restrained, essentially, from carrying out their professional duties. In fact, we talked about this earlier, Joyce. You were saying people want to come back to the profession. There was so much self-loathing in journalism because of the forced censorship and self-censorship.
And also just jaded. And, you know, some of them are just jaded. And also given the job prospects of where the whole media landscape is at, and this was before G14 happened, and given where it is now, Malaysia is back. A lot of foreign press people are coming to Malaysia to cover Malaysia, and even for us media people, we're so busy. There's so much to do, so much stuff to follow, right? The news flow that's coming out. So yeah, you can see that the passion's coming back with a lot of journalists, and they're all excited. But I mean, coming back to what Jahaba is saying, that, you know, some journalists don't ask the right questions. I think we need to give them time. Give them time to learn and also just to retrain. Remember, we spoke to Gayatri Sharad earlier, and she said that a lot of media personnel, we've been trained, some of them have been trained in a certain way. And if you're under a certain culture, if you're working for a particular media company and you're under a certain culture, you've been trained that way, you probably might need to rewire yourself to think as to what questions to ask, what is the lead of the story, and how to chase the story.
Right, so that was Gayatri Venkateswaran from Nottingham University, Malaysia.
Right, and also I think the same test or the same criteria should be placed on the new Pakatan government as well, you know, because it's one thing to have multiple press conferences and have people latching on to your every single word, but it's also to have the answers, you know, at their disposal. Now, granted, it's still very early days. The cabinet was only sworn in, less than 48 hours ago, right? Now, so I know time is of the essence. Time has to be given not just to the media practitioners, but also to the cabinet. But ultimately, hopefully, ideally, it's that, you know, everyone want both the media practitioners and the thought leaders or the cabinet can also up their games.
Also, I think what would be unrealistic to expect is that media organizations, especially those that are politically linked, to actually change the way they operate, because they still have a vested interest. We heard the former Deputy Prime Minister Zaid Ahmad, Ahmad Zaid Hamidi, saying that he expects Barisan Nasional come back to power in the next general election. So why should they, change track and stop supporting their former, political bosses?
I feel as media, it's not whether or not you should support one team or another. At the end of the day, you should just report a balanced kind of story. That's what they should do. Well, they should
ownership has
that.
Not changed.
Yeah, that's true.
The ownership structures have not changed. Yeah. They're still in the hands of politically linked individuals who might or might not have switched their allegiances to the new government.
Yeah, but I guess as media professionals, they should look into doing their jobs professionally. Now, moving forward, you can see editorially a number of them. Their front pages have changed.
Now, whether or not it's sustainable.
And whether that's cosmetic or real, right? So the cosmetic. So yeah, Claire Rucastle Brown now on the front page of The Star, and many media linked to the former government.
Or Tune M as well on their front pages.
Can they sustain that, as you say, Han? And is that more than cosmetic? Okay, taking us up to the next bulletin, Two Door Cinema Club with Something Good Can Work. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han, and the morning run continues. It's the 23rd of May and it's just 8 minutes past 7 in the morning. Now, yesterday during the tell-all press conference by the new anti-graft chief, Dato Mohamed Shukri Abdul, he said there was no evidence to support the former Prime Minister Najib Razak's claims that 2.6 billion ringgit deposited into his account was from a prince in Saudi Arabia, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, to be more precise. Dato Shukri said that investigators from the MACC were sent to Saudi Arabia and met with the prince, but the prince could not provide supporting document to back up that claim. Now, also at this press conference, which was held shortly after Najib arrived at the MACC headquarters to give his statement to explain a suspicious transfer of some 42 million ringgit into his bank account, the press conference by Shukri was held, and it was an amazing one. If you heard it, it made great radio, despite our scratchy line to that live conference. Now, there are many people came back with their first impressions of what he revealed, including, I believe, the lawyer for PAS, the Islamic Party, who said that that he should not have said what he said, and there's some debate around that. But nevertheless, we'll go to Cynthia Gabriel. She's the founder of the anti-graft organization C4, and asked her for her main takeaways from the tell-all press conference.
Well, it's a story that was waiting to be told for so long, and I believe that he felt very emotional and very victimized by the whole episode and whatever happened and how he had to retire early because of how MACC was also targeted during the probe. To be honest, I'm not very surprised that he came out to tell all. But to be frank, I think his tell all is also coming at a very critical juncture where the investigations are now being reopened and that he is now the new head of the MACC. So we have to be very professional about how the MACC is going to carry out the investigations on the SRC and the 1MBB financial flows and so on. So I think we need to look at what happened in the past and how the institutions, particularly the MACC, was very, very badly victimized as a result of political interference and executive interference of the Najib administration. And that was very, very wrong.
We also asked Cynthia about the culture of intimidation that was very much part of the previous administration, as revealed by Dato Sri Shukri. So we asked Cynthia, where did this culture stem from and how did we allow our government to get so thuggish?
Well, I think it's really the result of 60 years of one-party rule. It's unbridled power that has actually resulted in so much power centralized in the hands of the Prime Minister. so much power centralized at the cabinet level, up to the point that the malfeasance got so bad and that they needed to actually cover it. They needed to actually ensure that the institutions don't get to them and don't find out the truth. And they made sure that the people were also severely harassed and intimidated, and so that they could continue to rule. And I think it's really their own doing that we have come to this stage now. So it's really a scenario where there were very few or hardly no check and balances that were involved at all in the Barisan National rule.
Also, the MACC HQ yesterday, Dato' Sri Najib Razak left the place at 3:15 in the afternoon after 5 hours of questioning. He told the press that he will return tomorrow again for further questioning. So we asked Cynthia about the process at this point of investigation and if it is likely that questioning will be drawn out over a lengthy period.
Well, yes, very much so. It's a very complicated corruption crime. And right now, MACC is focusing on SRC International, which is the 1MDB subsidiary. And SRC International will actually be looking at how that $42 million got into the personal bank accounts of Najib. And he has to actually answer for it. So there are several other tranches of 1MDB financial flows. So it will take a lot of time and a lot of effort from MACC officials, the police, Bank Negara, and all these institutions that were at one point investigating, and then everything stopped all of a sudden because the Attorney General had decided that there was no case back then. So yes, it is now restarting, and Najib was called in today, but I believe that there will be many more days that he will be hauled up for further questioning.
That was founder of the NGO involved in anti-corruption, Cynthia Gabriel, for her thoughts on Shukri Abdul's from the MACC in his tell-all press conference yesterday. Now, we also spoke to Tan Sri Raymond Navaratnam, director of the Asian Strategy and Leadership Institute. We asked him what he thinks the MACC needs to do now to restore its credibility.
Well, it is not for MACC alone. It is for the government to come out very strongly and say the Prime Minister must give this public assurance backed up by the cabinet that the MACC is going to be now regarded as fully independent. That should immediately be taken to introduce amendments to the present legislation which do not empower the MACC enough, do not give them the confidence that they can be independent. For instance, they should not be answerable to the Prime Minister, but answerable to Parliament. And there are lots of recommendations made by NGOs, made by the MACC itself, made by Transparency International, of which I was president at one time. We have given lots of recommendations to enable the MACC to operate more efficiently, effectively, impartially, and independently. Now, if the government is serious about stamping out corruption, which is absolutely essential, and if they want to follow their manifesto closely, religiously, then they must act now. We have postponed action for far too long, and that's why corruption, as determined by the Transparency International in Berlin, has been declining. And this is bad for public confidence, bad for the country, bad for investment, bad for our future. So please, act soon, act now.
That was Tan Sri Raymond Navaratnam from ASLI. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.